Chapter 2. 3-2-1. Preparations were well underway for the faithful to leave Varadesh to take the law, and law of the One, to the ignorant cities of Colchis. 4 days had passed since Lorgar's inaugural proclamation, and the city's efforts had been bent to the creation of the vast enterprise. Nairo helped marshal the grand expedition, part caravan, part army. Former slaves laboured willingly at the same tasks that years before they had been forced to perform at the end of the Scourge. To serve Lorgar was to be part of the coming of the One, a player in the unfolding drama of Colchis's salvation. Nairo felt it too. Though he was not so often in Lorgar's presence of late, the Ecclesiarch being occupied with his studies and works, Nairo was still filled with the same hope that had stirred him when the child had been found in the camp of the Declined. The liberation of Colchis had begun and would not be stopped. It made him almost tearful to think that he might live to see the day when all on his world were free of bondage, that the dream he had taught others in his youth might become a reality by the hand of Lorgar. But all was not perfect. Cor Pharaon continued to have his venomous claws deep in the soul of the bearer of the word. The rest eve, before the vanguard of the faithful host was due to set out, Nairo found himself attending alone to the Ecclesiarch. As he helped the giant man to dress for the final mass, so different from the boy in the desert, yet so much the same also, Nairo dared voice his opinion.
Cor Pharaon has too much power, bearer of the word, he said gently, as he slipped a broad belt around the waist of Lorgar. You have given him the authority to run all of Varadesh in your absence.
He is my archdeacon, Lorgar replied, holding up his arms for Nairo to wind the sash about him.
Always he has served himself as much as you, Nairo insisted.
And you have not, Lorgar said quietly. Was it for the One that you followed, or for the chance to be lifted from slavery? I remember the lessons that fell from your lips, equal in machination to the sermons of Cor Pharaon. Nairo tied the belt and started to pin golden badges upon the breast of the Ecclesiarch's robe, sigils of his office and the One.
If that is the case, then I have been vindicated, for the freeing of those in serfdom has paved the way to the glorious ascent of the One.
He slid plain silver rings onto the massive fingers of his holy master.
Cor Pharaon is archdeacon, but in your absence might as well be ecclesiarch. What tempers his ambition now?
What more could he achieve? Countered Lorgar. If, as you say, he is paramount in authority, he aspires only to maintain such position. Above all else, he is still driven by the true word, and in me he has seen that given form, and through me has been delivered to the heights from which the truth shall be spread. Even if self-interest should guide him, it is married to the interests of the Covenant, and the One. 3-2-2. Nairo found he could not argue against this, though half-formed misgiving still nagged him when he returned to his chambers. His sleep that night fitful, his dreams portending some formless disaster yet to come. He woke fatigued. The former slave performed his final tasks in a half-sleep, until he and a mass of others were assembled outside the city. Soldiers and riders numbered in their thousands, accompanied by such engines and vehicles as could be made available, wagons and half-tracks, armoured trucks and sun-yachts in their hundreds. With them, shaded by great parasols carried by teams of sternbacks, the faithful waited for the Ecclesiarch. Priests and deacons of all ranks, along with countless missionaries and freed slaves, with food stockpiled over the preceding days, great tankers of water and feed for the beasts drawn by teams of hundreds. Manpower was not an issue for the Covenant. There were countless multitudes willing to bend their backs and blister their hands in service to the bearer of the word, in exchange for a blessing, or just to be in the presence of the Golden One. Lorgar appeared at the gate, and the cheer of the faithful shook the walls. walls recently repaired and bolstered, which spoke something of Corferon's paranoia that all would not go well and enemies might come to Varadesh sooner rather than later. As large as the force that departed was, 10,000 armed followers still remained to guard the City of Grey Flowers against an enemy that might think to strike at the Covenant's heart while its spiritual leader was abroad. With the Ecclesiarch came his Archdeacon, carried upon a shade-covered sedan chair in the burgeoning light of Dawnaway. Lorgar walked beside it, unheeding of the sun's merciless power. Corferon stepped down, and Nairo was close enough to hear the exchange between them.
"Go with the blessings of the Covenant, as well as its mortal servants," said Corferon.
Voice trembling, Lorgar laid a hand upon the back of Corferon's head and bowed, touching his forehead to that of the man who had raised him as his son and acolyte.
"Be strong for me, father, and stand ready for my call."
"All that you need, Varadesh shall provide," Corferon assured him.
"I shall not return to these gates until Colchis is saved," promised Lorgar. He straightened, nodded gently as though assuring himself, and set his eyes upon the distant horizon. He raised his voice so that it carried across the vast tumult of humanity sprawled before the holy city. His words carried to the minds and hearts of all who were present, within and without.
"It begins! The word or the mace shall be our creed. We must be merciful but unflinching, compassionate yet relentless. Every life lost in the cause shall be in vain if we shirk from the final duty the One has set before us. Yet each soul saved shall live immortal in the Empyrean of the One. We may falter, we may fall, but we cannot be defeated while we stay faithful to the truth. Onwards, children of the One! Onwards to glory and salvation!"
323. As Lorgar had spoken, so it was. Great were his accomplishments, and sparse is the time and space for their recollection. Be it known that he travelled and laboured for many days along the coast and into the deserts, bringing the word and the truth with him. The faithful first came upon Golgora, beyond the Covenant city of Tezenesh, and before the walls Lorgar spoke of the truth and of the coming of the One. The viziers and elders of Golgora had not been idle in the time of Lorgar's ascension, and knew well of the bearer of the word and the following he had gathered. Touched by the spirit of the One, they opened their gates to the faithful, as had Varadesh, and welcomed the truth into their city. So it was at Cathol, at Martias, Lanansa, and Aldesh. Yet not every city was pleased to be subjected to enlightenment. At Epicea, for long centuries a stronghold of the Church of the Archivist Deliverance, boulders were cast from catapults on the walls, and flaming arrows welcomed the disciples of the truth. Mighty were reckoned the towers of that city, yet for only a long noon, post-noon, and dusk-eve did they hold against the fervour of the faithful. Assailed from without, finally the city was broken from within by those who had been swayed to the truth brought to them by the words of Lorgar. At the fall, as Lorgar had promised, the Epiceans were given the choice of submission or death. A few chose death and were quickly sent to the Imperium to meet the judgment of the One. Most chose conversion, either out of fear or finally repenting before the sermon of the Ecclesiarch, having initially resisted out of fear of slavery. Knowing that they would be able to live freely under the Covenant, where before they would have faced subjugation, the Epiceans rejoiced for a whole day and wholeheartedly swore their city to the cause. Other cities resisted or capitulated, or were razed, their populations slain to the last adult, irrevocably corrupted by their wayward faith and dogma. Great was the carnage at Cathrace, where only 1 in 10 converted, and tears marked the cheeks of the Ecclesiarch as the great pyres consumed the bodies of those who refused to hear the truth. Nairo watched his holy master mourn the city from dusk eve to cold fall, 2 days after, as he went alone into the desert to seek solace and communion with the One, returning with a shroud over his face and his golden skin hidden beneath the ash of the razed city.